This is the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise.
It's good to have your company on the Sounding Board for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to drink, choose to Drinkwise. Tuesday morning, episode 12, series 9. And I've been told today by the co-host of this show to just come to me cold. I don't know where
not true.
I don't know where you're going to take this, Craig Cutchison, but you said just come to me straight away.
No, not true at all, but good morning to you. And we acknowledge the Sounding Board fraternity's enthusiasm with the return of PVO.
I thought it might have been that.
As it was famously sung, PVO, he's back again.
Now, for those who may be listening for the first time, who is PVO?
Peter Van Onselen, who, of course, we followed very closely with his over-the-top piece to cameras and his over-enthusiastic coverage of Canberra.
And his reactions to some of the other reactions to his work.
Yeah.
That's what got me most excited about Peter.
He was a world-class inserter of himself into a story. And he is now bobbed up at all. So he left Channel 10 in what is now known as acrimonious circumstances because there was some legalities on the way out the door.
And when he did do that, you said, we will see him again.
We will see him again.
And where are we seeing him again?
He positioned himself as being sick of politics or bored of politics at the time, only to bob up and do a casual story in The Australian pretty much straight afterwards. So we knew that we weren't buying the crazy he was selling. And I thought a political career beckoned. But he's now bobbed up at the Daily Mail.
Right.
The Daily Mail is not exactly the New York Times of political journalism. Oh, to be fair. No, but by their own acknowledgement, they've been more focused on...
By their own acknowledgement?
Well, they've mocked politics in the publication until now. So this is a strategic shift, if nothing else.
Because this is the one that used to say that Jimmy Bartel walked past the place at upon which he once lived and may have been thinking about his life in that house as he walked past. Is that the organisation?
Yeah.
I mean, may have been thinking about his former life as he walked past his house, his former house.
Yeah. I mean, if clickbait was a country, they're buying up every block of land they can find. Right? They are at the centre of the click journalistic era. And PVO clicks is now arrived. So
it's the good mix.
How PVO...
As far as clicks go, this is a good mix. You've sold this to me nicely. So this is a good arrangement and relationship.
What I'm fascinated with is how PVO integrates federal politics into a clickbait world.
Watch you.
Because I don't think this is it's a strategic shift in allowing politics into the platform. But it's not a strategic shift in the nature of the content, I don't think. So how he finds a middle ground between what's federally relevant and of national significance and what clicks, and he's going to appeal.
I'll back him too. I will back him too. He got cut through, didn't he? He got cut through from an organisation that didn't necessarily get cut through.
I wouldn't underestimate him. I tell you what he is now a prime target for a backbencher trying to get famous. Because his ability to create fame, I think, will be interesting through this platform, and so
watch out for those stories.
Yeah, we might see a bit more of that English style sort of takedown. Who knows?
Private lives are open.
Well, I don't know. I'm fascinated to see which way he goes, which way they take him.
Yeah,
because he's got clearly got.
You always
PVO often, watches on
when you started a new organisation, and you've done it several times. Most people who've survived the media game for 20 plus years have moved around a bit.
Yep.
The key to the start of the new joint is you've got to have one in your back pocket before you actually...
Must have a story.
You must have something on the go that you're about to go bang with.
If you arrive day one and don't have a story, people have lost faith in you by 5 o'clock.
Straight away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's this bloke?
Because you've got disingenuous day one, don't forget, by the way. When you walk into a newsroom, there's always disingenuous day one. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I think I do. As in, everyone's patting you on the back
everyone
until midday.
Everyone pats you on the back. Great to see you. Hey, welcome. I've always rated you. Yeah, well, you've always been a good operator. All these sort of newsy words. And then at lunch they're saying, never thought much of that, Damon. What's he doing here? So everyone's like telling
you. That's the staff that you're working with.
Yeah, your colleagues
are. But the people who've made the decision, they're walking around patting themselves on the back.
Smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
We've got him.
But then they say, 3 o'clock, what do you got?
Because recruitment is a sport in print journalism and news journalism. So you haven't got one by five, they're second guessing the decision. So I agree with you. You've got to have one in your back pocket. So back pocket PVO.
So has he started yet or just the announcement?
I don't know, but
we're going to find out soon.
I don't read it, but I must admit, I am about to start following him via the platform.
Now, you're up and about here, and I like it when you do this because you've been really good in the Sounding Board for the last 3 or 4 years, Hutchie. You've brought content and you've asked for certain orders, but I now run the risk with what I'm about to introduce to our conversation of shutting you down for the next 40 minutes because normally, in fact, I think you once walked out of the studio when I mentioned the name Dylan Howard. And there he goes. He's out. And I need to do that. He's back, by the way. I need to do that today because, Hutchie, I was sent a link to the product, The Daily, which I am well aware of. I don't listen to it every day, but it is a very, very good podcast. And on the weekends, I think it's the Sunday edition, they go long form, about 44 minutes, specifically long form on this one I'm about to highlight to you, relating to Lachlan Cartwright's time at the National Enquirer while working with what was once a friend of his or a colleague of his in Dylan Howard, who you have a history with. I'll just play a little bit now to sort of let you get a feel for where I want to take it. I've brought audio.
David Pecker, the chief executive of AMI, removed the top editor. In his place, Pecker pulled a young editor named Dylan Howard over from another AMI publication, Radar Online. Howard and I met a few years earlier in New York. He attended the same university I did in Melbourne, though we weren't friends in Australia. Now, two Aussie journalists in New York, we swapped gossip and hit it off.
So that's just to
was
set
that
it up.
Was that an AI voice, by the way?
It was attributed at the start of the podcast, and I think at the end of it, it was a friend reading it, or someone he was known to, Lachlan Cartwright. It did sound a bit like that at times.
It's not Lachlan's voice.
No. Yeah. I think he makes that very clear at the start. Anyway, it's the verbal form of an article, which I know you've read, Hutchie, because you and I have exchanged the article. I didn't get to read the article. I did listen to the podcast. It's relating to the catch and kill component, which we discussed heavily some years ago through the book of Ronan Farrow. Under that title, I love raising this topic because Dylan Howard is about to find himself and his name again in the court system in America. I'm assuming that, by the way, because Donald Trump is now in the stand. Is it David Pecker?
Yep.
I saw his name was mentioned in the podcast regularly.
He was a publisher who's accused of being the catch and kill architect on behalf of Trump.
Well, I saw an article in the past 24 hours that he's going to appear in the Trump case.
Okay.
I'm assuming Dylan will be mentioned and maybe even appear as well. I like mentioning it because you once had a relationship professionally with Dylan Howard that you once threatened me, and you've basically shown me a legal letter that you can't talk about Dylan Howard.
That's not true.
Well, you can talk about him now.
No, you don't embellish. Don't embellish the situation. Well, All I would say about Lachlan Cartwright is I know Lachlan. So we tried to hire Lachlan once, and he is a very good journalist, so has a great news flair. I haven't seen him probably for, I guess, 10 years, and I think that was towards the end of the run for us, and our job offer was unsuccessful to him, but we did try and hire him. And he struck me at the time as a very credential journalist, very talented guy, and so I've sort of kept half an eye on what he was up to since, just not if I see his name or read it or come across. I didn't know the depth of what he has talked about, but he's
torn with what he was caught up in, and he doesn't wash his hands of his own involvement in some of the problems with the catch and kill concept. Equally, he admits to doing it. He's wrestled with it clearly. And I think I'm just going on what I listen to. I think it's cathartic for him to get it all out.
Well,
he's
done the media rounds. He did another interview yesterday with Nine on the news last night. So he's speaking freely and offering his view on the circumstances.
Yeah. I just treat it seriously for a moment. Where do you see the Trump case going? And I know that you think I'm going to come at you from the Dylan Howard perspective. We've done that many times in the past. I wanted to do it again this way today. Where do you see this court case going? Well, I know you don't have a great line of sight on the American court system, but these are, again, not for the first time with Trump, extraordinary historical times with a man wanting to be the next or to resume his status as president of the United States of America going through a case that could have him end up inside.
Yeah, I don't know is the answer. I'll be watching it because it there'll be a lot. This will be a real behind the curtain. Well, there'll be allegations at least of behaviour behind the journalistic curtain that will test people's view of the industry, I think. So that'll be, and then I think the National Enquirer has had, it's not its first rodeo in terms of
this type of...
It's method.
And again, we always taught as journalists, assume for the people are listening to you or reading your copy for the first time. So the catch and kill component, a lot of our listeners will know, but ultimately it is the accessing and often purchasing, in fact, regularly purchasing of a story and the people involved in a story for the express purpose to not publish in order to... provide a favour for the subject of the negativity around the story.
It's to buy a story off the market to make it unavailable and killed, in essence, in order to curry favour or to financially benefit from the person who would have been hurt by the story. So what hasn't been said that I've read or any claims made is what the commercial relationship was between Donald and David Pecker.
And the National Enquirer.
There's been accusations that David Pecker... sought to influence the election by miscovering or poorly covering Hillary and others on one side, on the other side, catch and killing the things that may do damage.
And using certain accounts attached to the National Enquirer, I'm talking about financial accounts, to launder, slush it through, so to speak. I don't think I'm saying anything that's going to get us into legal problems there, am I? The allegation.
These are the allegations untested in the court, and we honour that and respect that. But that's a suggestion that there's stories being bought off the market that may have otherwise done damage. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean those stories are right or wrong, by the way. Like the Dorman was given $30,000 for an untested claim.
Mm. And whether about a paternity suit of...
Or about the love child and another relationship. Now, the allegations are at the point of just writing the check without even hearing what the person had to say almost. Like, we're not going to deal with this right now in the middle of an election. But it does strike the heart of... of journalistic integrity and all those things. So it'll be a fascinating case.
Yeah. Have you spoken to Dylan recently?
No.
Not since the letter came, the legal letter?
Damo. I don't know why you find it so hard. There's no animosity. Everyone just moves on.
You once employed him, though, didn't you?
Well, I think that's obvious, yes. Yep.
And Nina let her talk about him as per the legal letter.
I just choose to move on in life, Damo. Life is short.
All right, Hachi, we'll move on.
Life is short. Yeah, just a bit more into our beat, this story.
Yes.
So I've talked about the PR payoff in news.
Well, you've exposed that. And because you used to do it yourself.
I think we still do it, to be honest. You'll hear it from time. There's been a couple on our platforms that you haven't picked up, which has been pleasing. But
I pick it up, Hachi.
From time to time.
I know who you are.
But there's a general sense of connection from time to time between the PR teams of organisations and newsrooms, if they can find shared benefit. And we've talked about Mitch Clary on the Mass Eyes, who produced our podcast, who came through under you and I, to be fair, being one of the great proponents, if not at the top end. Like, if Tom Morris can improve on one thing, it's the PR payoff, because the Mass Eye is the clubhouse leader.
Is he the best across all parts of media right now?
If the PR payoff started its own media platform, Mitch would be like... be John Ram, be target number one on the alternate tour, because he is the best. And
now that you've patched things up with Mitch, because he drove you to the footy when he drove past you a couple of weeks ago, and you hadn't spoken to him for 3 years, but now you're good again, so you can talk about him positively.
Well, since he went rogue and went on the record about that.
Oh, he did too.
About the trip.
He actually gave fresh quotes to Jackie Epstein. They weren't just Jackie Epstein's normal off-the-radio quotes, they were freshies.
But when the PR payoff, so this is a brilliant piece of comms work, by the way, by the team at Greyhound Racing Victoria. So I want to get that out there at the front. This was clever.
Which means you've got an involvement with Greyhound Racing Victoria.
I've worked with Greyhound Racing. Oh, there you go. Greyhound Racing for 15 years.
There you go.
Yeah, I love the sport and it's...
Actually, I do know you love the sport.
That's well known. This was... Nathan Murphy retiring at 24. He was the big story in town, the big interview. And Mitch had the exclusive interview with, well, I think he was the first one to publish
it. It was just before, from the timeline, I think, actually, with what I think you're about to throw, so it was a couple of days before the announcement that he's going to retire.
But it was the mood.
The
was,
week of.
The mood was setting that his days were over. Here's the story that he went for and he got.
Welcome back. Magpies Premiership defender Nathan Murphy still doesn't know when he'll return to football. The 24-year-old spoke with Chief Football Reporter Mitch Cleary about the new approach he's turned to in the hope of playing again.
The fearless Premiership Pie grappling with footy's biggest issue. Nathan Murphy's return from concussion remains contingent on his frame of mind.
Definitely the mindset and continuing that.
So there you've got the story.
Good story. Good story.
You know, may not play again. Got the exclusive words. Spoken for the first
pitches.
Time.
Pitches.
Yeah. Now, in order to get that away,
yeah,
it came with the PR payoff. Here it is.
to attack it how I want to. So I'll continue to do that, and when the time is right, we'll get back to football.
Murphy, an ambassador for Greyhound Adoption Month, a solo dog owner himself after ex-housemate Jack Ginnivan moved out.
I just can't trust Jack with Juno, so that's why I thought I'd take it upon myself to...
So, Greyhound Adoption Month.
Hang on, before you go, that's really good. He's got the PR mention, but he's then got the hottest ticket in town name in there as well, Jack Ginnivan.
Yeah, he did mention
that. That's as good a reference you can get.
So, and now when you go for the PR payoff interview, right?
Yes.
You do need to make the person who gave you the PR payoff interview think that you may run more of their story.
And because that is the case, you've often got the PR person in on the interview.
Oh, no, they're there.
Yeah, and they're putting pressure on you. Can you ask about this program?
Yeah, they're there. They're saying to you, you know, they're trying to influence you into asking. So often you've got to ask four or five Dorothy Dixes that you know aren't going to make the final cut about the PR payoff, which in this case is Greyhound Adoption Month, in order to get to the real stuff you want, which is, are you going to play footy again? For the first time, Damo.
Oh, no.
The sailing board has got its hands.
You've even brought your drum roll sound effects.
Has got its hands on
Is this exclusive?
On the exclusive Dorothy Dix questions. The stuff that's not making the cut that you need to ask in order to make the subject feel they might get a disproportionate share of real estate in the story. And here is exclusive audio.
No, you can't do
yes.
it.
Yes.
Don't.
It was on the record.
I'm washing my hands of this, Mitch.
It was on the record. It was done on the record. Here is the exclusive audio of the Seven Chief Football Reporter.
You can't, Hutchie.
Mitch Cleary really performing for the publicist at GRV.
No, I'm not part of this.
Have a listen to the first. These are in order. The first questions.
No, all order.
The first question. And we've clipped Nathan's answers to make it go fast. This is the order of questions he asked before he got to the real stuff. Let's go.
Well, Nate, take us through what you're up to today with the Greyhound Adoption Program.
Yeah, no, it's been good. Had the two dogs here, which has been great.
What would you say to people who are considering picking up a dog and given you've got one at home?
Yeah, I'd say definitely do it, especially these ones. They're so calm.
What's his excuse with the dog? Is he too busy at his new club, or is he just looking to a few things?
I don't think there's an excuse. I think he's still just learning to look after himself, really.
You asked five.
Couple of questions I've got. How did you get your hands on that?
Well, that's some very clever. So the Greyhound Racing Victoria team, that's how clever they are at marketing. They've not only got Greyhound Adoption Month in the news.
Yep.
Nathan Murphy's an organic dog owner, so it's a great selection of ambassador.
Once lived with Jack Ginnivan.
He's topical.
That's his best product.
He's newsworthy, he's authentic, he's 24, he's all of those things. And then now we've got our hands on the secret tape, which promotes Greyhound Adoption Month even more. So we're complicit in this. We are. But that is just an insight into the mass eye at work.
So where does that go? That does just find itself on the cutting room floor. Or is that repurposed for the Greyhound Racing website, maybe?
I would think on a PR payoff, and I've been involved in this in my younger days.
You're just given that content, don't you?
Well, most people are a two-question PR payoffer, or a three.
You got to get two in, do you?
Knowing that they're not going to use... really, any of them, or one at best.
You've got to use one, though, don't you?
Well, you've got to at least a reference.
You've got to pitchfork one in.
He's a bit more generous on the references than most. Like the old schools used to just...
But he stays sweet with the person involved because they've got another client in another week's time. Yeah.
But he's given it the five questions he knows he's not using. If you listen back to that, he's not even really articulating his questions clearly.
No, he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
He goes, tell us about the dog and what are you here for? Because he knows that question. He knows that he's not using that audio. He's already dismissed the possibility.
He's looking at his watch and he's going, it's 10:17. I've got to be at this bloody Richmond training at 11 o'clock.
He's looking around to see the PR.
Got to get these five questions in before I get the one I want.
The PR guy look happy to have asked enough. Right. Okay, tell us about your footy.
All right, now, Gillon McLachlan. What do you know? You know more than you let on about this issue. You know that I'm obsessed with how badly Victorian racing is run and that Gillon McLachlan has been targeted, identified, headhunted to become the chair of Racing Victoria. It's in motion, Hutchie, surely. Is it about to drop?
Well, he's nominated for the board, hasn't he? He's nominated, so he'll get on and he'll win and he'll be chair.
He wouldn't have nominated unless it's a done deal, would he? That's the way people like Gillon operate.
Oh, you think he's...
Oh, well, what? Are you going to subject himself to the vagaries of an amateur body running an election?
You've even asked that. When has he ever done anything where it wasn't already done beforehand? And it's been a two-year, 1.5-year process, hasn't it? So the fact that he's decided to do it, I must admit...
I'm excited. I might be excited for the first time as a fan.
Why?
Second time as a fan. Pride of Journey, you excited me as a fan last week. Yep. And oh, well, you know my views on this sport, and I think you and maybe others think I'm a little bit negative about it with what's happening in Victoria. But I have watched it disintegrate in comparison with what has happened in New South Wales over a number of years, and maybe even before Peter Volandis, but certainly since Peter Volandis, in terms of how this state is stacking up on a racehorse perspective and an industry perspective against New South Wales.
I think it's awesome for racing that he's done it. It gives Victorian racing true leadership, gives them political muscle and clout, and it gives the industry someone that can get everyone together and get it moving, because it can be divided given there's multiple clubs. I was a little surprised he did it, I must admit. I thought that he may have – I know how much time and effort he's put into his post AFL, and he's been very particular about what he does and doesn't do.
What's he going to do there?
That's for him to.
Has he identified something?
I think he's got a few things brewing. Yeah, I was a little surprised he took this one on, because only because the challenge of it is so big,
and it's personal. Whether he wants it to be or not, it is now Gillon McLachlan versus Peter Volandis, and he will not want it sold that way. But that's exactly what it is.
And also, it's like reward for effort is it wouldn't be on the high end. Like it's not. It's not an executive job, so it's a chair job. So you're part time.
Yeah,
but it will, you know,
there'd be a fee attached to the role, wouldn't there? But not the executive corporate fee.
Not that anywhere near reflects his value.
Yeah,
yeah. So he adds way, way more value than there means to compensating for it. So
yeah,
on that, I think it's great for racing, and I think it's quite selfless of him to do it. I was just a little bit surprised he did.
And as we touched on before, when you start a new job or a new role, you come armed with what it is that you've got. In Peter Van Onselen's case, you'll have a story ready to go. Gillon McLachlan will have a range of employees he will want to have in place within, I'd say, days.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Is Simon Letlin one of those people?
Don't know.
Don't you?
No, I read that in the paper only.
Yeah, yep. You've quickly answered that question. Make me think you know the answer.
No, I have no idea. No, honestly. No idea.
If I was framing a market, he'd be pretty prominent on a chart, wouldn't he?
I honestly don't know.
Hmm.
I'd like to have great regard for Simon, so I'd love to see him land somewhere of significance in a role that suits him, but I don't know whether that's it.
Hey, Channel 7, now we'd known for some time that James Warburton was leaving the role. That was public, but what we found out last week, he brought forward his departure date. Jeff Howard is now taking over. It's the timeline on it, Hutchie. All you can deal with in this perspective is a timeline, and it has not been a good few months for Channel 7 in a public perception sense. Obviously, even if you want to remove the Ben Roberts-Smith involvement with Kerry Stokes, you've had the spotlight or the focus on the program spotlight and all the issues relating to the Bruce Learman wooing in terms of the contract paid to him to then appear on their shows, and other behaviours behind the scenes of producers. It's a timeline that's clearly been brought forward.
Yeah, but I don't think it's... I mean, they said worst case end of June, right? And when you find there's a new... Like, I think the timing made sense, right? He's been a very, very strong contributor to the network. He brought the debt down in half. He's set it up for the future. I think his resume, like his achievements, read really well historically. And when you've announced who the successor is... Like, there is that period, and we saw it in the AFL, where you're not sure who's in charge. Mm. And they felt like they needed to get on with the next era.
It makes sense from the outside looking in.
Yep.
With everything that's gone on, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah. You got a baptism of fire on the email to staff, Jeff Howard.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It was portrayed as a bizarre email. It wasn't a bizarre email. I thought it was just pretty straightforward from the heart.
Well, it was a reference to his own life and his own, as he alluded to, clean life.
Yep.
Is that fair reflection of the email?
Well, I think he tried to give a little bit of himself in the email. And then inevitably what happened, someone leaked it, which, you know.
Yeah. But it.
You'd like to think.
You could. It's not a stretch to I think, line up his observations of his own life style with what had been going on at the network. I don't think that's a stretch, is it?
Well, he's a conservative finance-led leader, and I think he probably thought that it was a chance to sort of just.
Re-establish
that he's a fairly sort of conservative guy at heart and. This won't be a high-flying error at 7.
Yep.
And, you know, given all the events around it, I think your observations are reasonable. But it wasn't bizarre. I thought it was just matter-of-fact and fair and reasonable.
Financial Review article during the week, Hutchie, we see News Corp Australia has tapped PwC Australia to help with its biggest restructure of the last decade as it seeks to deal with Meta ripping tens of millions of dollars out of the Australian news market. Any insight onto that one?
I read it, and I read the follow-up the next day. So it looks like that there's a restructure and
job cuts. Yeah.
I think the number they used was about $15 million, the Financial Review suggested. Now, that wasn't confirmed by News Limited by any means.
But I think it's more, Hutchie.
But it might, yeah, it might be more. But that's...
If we were to use the anonymous sources that News Corp and the Herald Sun always does, I think we'd be able to find someone who say that $15 million figure is on the low end.
Yeah, so if you don't, like, it's not great for Australian.
No, it's not. I don't want to talk about it from that perspective, but I...
I'd do for a moment. Like, it's... For all of the attacks on Meta and all of the you know, often you know, we have a bit of tongue in cheek laughing at the way that they've reacted, that lost revenue from their business would have a direct correlative to the amount of jobs lost. So I do feel for anyone who may or may not be allowed to, who may lose their role.
Yeah, it's across the board.
Because believe in Australian journalism, and we want to see more journalists.
And again, equally, Hutchie, I am too empathetic and sympathetic to this issue, clearly. I mean, that's what we do, and it's what we've known. And we both had a very good history with News Limited, but it's not just going to be journalists and media.
No, it'll be. It'll
it's the all parts of business. And, yeah,
it'll be.
Yeah.
And obviously they had some challenges in recent times with some of their bigger things. So, yeah, so... Feel for everyone who might be involved. Hopefully that's not right.
But what I will say at the end of this conversation, and I am genuinely serious about it and sympathetic and empathetic, but given the obsession with that organisation, with you personally and by extension your business, and how ultimately you're still standing after after that organisation trying to, I'd say, bring you down for the best part of 2 years, and all that's happened that I've read is one or two people may have left your business on willing terms and on good terms. You've restructured a few things. You've managed to renegotiate with the banks. Again, I'm reading this. You're not telling me this. Do you think they'll tackle their own financial issues the same way?
No, but nor
would you. I'll answer that for you. No, they won't.
No, but nor would you if you were the publisher, Damon. So that's all right. They're doing what they need to do. Like I'm only reading it in the Fin Review. They say PwC have been bought in. They say.
But imagine you brought PwC in. That'd be Hutchie's business in chaos again, wouldn't it? That wouldn't be as strong as what they would use.
Your words, not mine.
Well, I'm happy to say that. I mean, they went pretty personally on you.
I don't know.
As far as I know, Hutchie, you're still standing, and I'd argue you're probably in a strong position today, and I don't know. But I do monitor and watch what they've done to you, and I keep saying, just that torch they shine on the rest of the town, just shine it back on the own operations a little bit.
They are a huge proponent of journalism in Australia. They have always carried... disproportionate amount of depth in, like you couldn't fault their commitment to journalism or the volume of people they've had to do it, Damo.
Of course you could.
You couldn't.
Of course you could.
They've been long time hirers and they gave us an opportunity.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm nothing but respect. I hope that they get through this without too much, without too many roles going.
Yep. Moving along, just something a little bit left field, Hutchie. The model of Australian cricket at the moment where you've got national contracts offered under the Cricket Australia hierarchy, and then you've got the states that break out, and each state...
Well, this cuts into the Sheffield Shield.
Well, I'm getting to the state level. The state associations then also offer contracts, and some players have double ups, some just have the state. I think there's even a couple just have the national. But I want to raise it from the perspective of what's now happening in recent times and now en masse effectively with the great state of WA cricket, where there's big name WA cricket is now choosing to not accept state contracts. And then it's not money that would, in those guys' lives, really change their lives, given they've got access to the higher funds. But I feel it's the start of something very different, and I feel it's the start of what will be the end of, as we've known it, to the contracts offered to cricketers in this country, because they're effectively consultants now, aren't they? They're free agents on every single year, and they can take whatever deals they want. And sometimes, and we've read this, being beholden to a state cricket contract or even an Australian cricket contract is restrictive to that person as an entity, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to see more and more players as the years go on who just have no interest in playing national cricket for their country, and it becomes uneconomic for them to do it.
Yeah.
And we're going to see more and more players play. That's providing that the funds keep growing in global T20 cricket, which I suspect they will, particularly with America starting to get this World Cup in America.
You're big on this one, aren't you?
I think it's going to have a huge effect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just – and the Sheffield Shield, Dame, I know it's hard for you to get your head around. But
wasn't coming at it from that perspective.
Domestic first-class cricket where 18 to 20 people on a Friday afternoon went to a ground that holds 100,000 – to watch, those days are over, Damo.
Some of my greatest cricket watching days were actually even at a step lower than that, Hutchie. Yep. The club cricket, when Dean Jones used to make sure he played for the Melbourne Cricket Club, and occasionally Murph Hughes was bowling to him from the Bulldogs.
Those days.
Or Footscray Footy Club, Cricket Club, as it was.
Yeah, you're maximising for every shot you hit now and for every ball you bowl, you want to be paid full tote on. So those days are gone. Hey, can we get a little bit of a different take this week on Craig's Carry On, if we can, Zipper? Hit the opener.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain. Flight attendants, please prepare for takeoff.
In the unlikely event of having to use the evacuation slides, follow the lighted path.
Craig's Carry On.
Of all the stingers we've put together on this show, that's the best, isn't it? It's Geordie's work, I think, isn't it?
Been to Sydney twice and Brisbane once in the last 4 days, so I've been on the plane a lot, had a bit of reflection time, had a very good run on the Carry On, by the way, all week, have batted 100% again, which is good to see. I want to tackle on-plane content today, Damo, because I have a few thoughts on how to reinvigorate it and how to go after getting it sorted.
We're talking the entertainment content.
Entertainment content, yep. The entertainment content. First of all, so I penned some thoughts on the plane. Of what I would do to fix, this is not specific to an airline, I fly both Virgin and Qantas, I just look for the cheapest fare, but how to fix.
Well, someone does on your behalf.
How to fix on-plane content, right?
Yeah.
And for starters, by the way, this relies on, and by the way, our Wi-Fi, have you noticed that Wi-Fi now, you only have about a 30 to 40% chance of getting Wi-Fi on your plane. Like, you need to see the Wi-Fi signal as you get in.
Actually, when you and I first let me into your end of season trips to the America back in 2000, whatever it was, 9 or 10, there was Wi-Fi on every single plane back then.
Well, I flew back from Spain last week and I was able to watch an AFL game above Dubai on Wi-Fi and return emails flying globally. And then on the weekend, I couldn't get
back
Wi-Fi
in the
Melbourne to Sydney.
The back in the backwater of Australia. Yeah.
So anyway, that's an aside. Three things on the content.
That's extraordinary in itself, and that summarises this country and this state. But keep going.
I always look for what we call unfair advantages, right? Like, what is your unfair advantage in life? You know what I mean by that, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
What do you bring to the table?
That you've got with it, no one else has got.
Yeah. What's the driver?
You've either cultivated or been born with
it. What's the driver in your golf bag? Yeah. And how do you maximise your unfair advantage? It's easier to be great at things that you've got unique to yourself than to fix your faults. Yeah. So you think about unfair advantages of a plane. Unfair advantage number one that they waste, right? They are a place where people gather on planes. They are an captivated, captive community, right? Whether you want to be in a community or not, you are in a 60 or 80 seat or 100 seat community.
You've thought about this, I can tell.
So why they don't turn that into some type of social network connection?
Oh, no, you're not allowed to stand up. You couldn't possibly interact with people.
You don't need to stand up.
No, Hutchie.
This is what should happen. You get to your seat, right, and you click in. You ask four questions, right? Do you want other people to know you're on this plane today, yes or no? You can say no, and then you can fly in private. You can, however, say yes, and then you are known that you are on the plane in that seat. Then it asks you three questions. Your name, your occupation, and your main interest. And so if you are on a plane and... thanks, Jacko, for the McCafe arriving. You're on a plane. You should be able to log onto your screen and go, there's 18 people that want to be known to be here. Oh, Damo's in 2A. Oh, he breaks for the Kangaroos and he works for...
What do you reckon I'd do on that option?
No, you'd be no.
No, it'd be a no, 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 no. Not on the plane.
But you should be able to network among the other seats from your seat, should you choose. Right?
And how do you do that?
I should be able to say, hey Bob, I see you're sitting in 2C and you're in TV production. We must catch up about that.
Actually, I can see problems with this.
No, only if you're not, it's an opt-in. So how often do you get off a plane and you go, oh, Jordan, I didn't know you were on the plane. Yeah, I was back in 35. So how you been, mate? Oh, I've got to go.
And you've had between an hour and,
an hour
and 17
may,
hours
you
where you could
have known someone sitting 18 seats behind you and you could have freely communicated with them. So that's number one.
Yep.
Number two, a little bit of innovation on the movies. So new releases are too late to get to the planes, right? They should get themselves in the hunt earlier for new releases. Here's why. The talkability around on the feeling of specialness, I saw something on a plane, would create a viral knock-on for those movie theatres. Imagine you could have seen Barbie or Oppenheimer early on a plane. Mm. You'd have come home and gone, hey, I flew to Brisbane today, Virgin, and you're not going to believe this. I've seen it. The new Barbie, it's not out till Tuesday, but I've seen it. It's really good. You got to take the girlfriends. You got to take your friends. Yeah. So they should invest in more content.
I like your first idea better than your second idea.
They should pay for a bit more premium content to be bought forward. It's good for the movies, but they also get a check for it, and it's good for the – and the third thing is the TV series to binge on the planes, right? It is always, always out of whack and awful.
You just sometimes get series 3, episode 4,
this
and 5.
This is my point.
Yes.
You get
You've
like
got to be four, series 1, episode 1.
You get 4 episodes of Succession series 3, and you end up going, oh, nothing else to watch, I'll watch it. And you watch, you've missed the first 2 series. You've had a glimpse. You finally get up to speed with the plot, all the stuff you missed. And then you land.
Yeah.
And then the experience is over. Whereas you need to put full series of bingeable shows on the content, because what that will do, Damo, is you'll go, I flew Qantas last week. I watched the first 3 episodes of Succession. Gee, I enjoyed it.
I'm going to book Qantas
next
week.
I'm going to book Qantas next time.
I've got to go back to Sydney.
I've got to go and get four Brisbane. Hours. And not only that, in a tech world, it should recognise that I've been on the plane before and say, you know, welcome back, Mr. We know you're up to series 4, episode 10 minutes in. Here's the resume button. So you actually have your own content hub that you can resume your experience with.
Yep. But, no, I like it.
Yeah, just as an aside, why do they know who's on the plane, by the way? Explain that to me.
Why what?
You know, ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We're heading off to Sydney very shortly. We're just waiting for Mr. Barrett and Mr. Jordan. If anyone knows if they're on board, please speak to the steward.
Like, I think what's happened is they've checked in, but there's no confirmed knowledge that they're actually on. I think that's why that happens.
So I'm about to go up in the air and rely upon them to not fall out of the sky and get me to the other end.
Yep.
Rely upon the security that comes with airlines. Yep. Go through X-ray security 75 different ways, and they can't tell me who's on board.
And
how do they not know who's on board?
On a recent flight I had, you'll love this one, it was Mr. Errol Goulden who they couldn't find for about 15
really?
Announcements. Yes. Yeah. The rest of the plane knew who he was, but they didn't know who he was.
Yeah. Well, simply, he would have been out on the wing.
Not bad, Archie. Not bad.
Sorry.
Yeah, actually, it's pretty good. Hey, WADA's going well. WADA had an opinion on everything about 2 weeks ago. Well, it's what they haven't done.
Oh, yeah, they've cleared the swimmer, sorry.
Well, yeah. So a little issue, Archie, with the 20, it was 2021. It was meant to be 2020. It was 2021 because of COVID, where the Tokyo Olympics were held, and up to, in fact, more
23.
Than 20. Yeah.
23 were found to have tested positive.
Chinese swimmers.
Yep. Yeah. But the governing body said that they had ingested it unknowingly.
It was just a flaw in the system. It was just a contamination.
Yeah,
so we just move on, let them compete.
Some executives at WADA were kept in the dark.
Oh, yeah, of course they were. Yeah. Yep. Going well, aren't they? Yep. I mean, they've got an opinion on everything, haven't they?
Well,
where do they fit on the list of cutting it up rough when they get attacked? WADA?
The glass jaw is really
the glass jaw is probably the better term. Yeah, where do they fit? They're up there, aren't they?
Yep, their glass jaw is enormous.
Have they got their doctors covered? Like the sports doctors?
Yep, they've got
them covered.
They do. Yeah. And they didn't find it until afterwards. But, yeah, they retrospectively agreed that was... unbelievable.
All right.
Dick Pound is findable, though, isn't he? If you need someone you can dig up on a story...
You used to love Dick Pound.
I reckon
you and Tim Cleary used to hunt Dick Pound down for
Tim
every
was one of the originals.
I think I got Dick a few times too.
Yep.
He was still giving quotes last week, wasn't he?
Did you see on the Herald Sun, did you see the reference to, there was criticism of the ratings for Jackie Felgate, which just to throw my hat in the ring on that, totally unfair. I think Jackie does a wonderful job and really believe that she'll be great at what she does. So
yep, I'm with you on that.
Support her. But did you see the reference to the Brains Trust finding out that Instagram followings, be it real or pay or purchased, do not equal? So there was an inference that her following is. Did I read that?
Yeah, you did read that. Yeah, I did read that. That reference there. Yeah, paid or purchased. I think we've got it, haven't we? There it is. Yeah, right. This is the the exact quote, line, radio station Tradie is finding out the hard way that Instagram followers, comma, whether real or purchased, do not equal ratings success.
Having seen the success of Jackie through COVID and the way she kept the community connected and the tone of her shareability of news, I have zero doubt that those followers of hers are organically reached because of her shrewdness in the way she's connected to an audience. So I thought that was a little bit unreasonable. The only thing I would say is if you want to buy Instagram followers, you can. Who's to stop you? So
can you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's been many footballers have done it over the journey.
Well, there were a few footballers who did it on the Twitter platform, weren't there? Yes. First up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if there was a way to...
There's a way to block them too, Hutch. You know that?
Yeah.
I'm an expert at that part of it.
Yeah, well, you've got an army.
I had a good spree last week, actually. I reckon I might have added 100 to the 8,000 I've already got.
What are you up to now?
I did check it. Didn't Julian Bayard check it for us?
Yeah, can we run the numbers on the day?
I'll get Julian Bayard to... I don't know how to do it, but he did it for us a couple of years ago, and it was up to about 3,000 or 4,000.
I'll tell you what I might do. I might run an event.
Yeah.
For those that you blocked. If you want to go to the Damo blocking event.
Well, I won't be going to it.
Just send me a tweet. I'm thinking about putting together a little event where we can have a collective conversation about what they did offend you. There'd be a lot of people who'd like to say sorry, I'm sure.
You've got a way of describing a certain character type of person with whatever character it is. What would you call the character of person who gets blocked, say, for the instance, me, but then sometime later, sometimes a day later, sometimes years later, realises they're blocked but don't want to be blocked and want access? What would you call that person? There's a lot of them out there, Archie, which surprises me.
Well, people that want to get, yeah.
They want to be unblocked.
Yep.
They come back around to me through various means, say, can you please unblock me?
Yeah.
I said, I don't even respond, but no.
Yeah.
Once you're blocked, you're blocked.
They're the person that can't get into the nightclub because their shoes don't look the right way.
There you go. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. If it wasn't your best one, we might land it there.
No, I'll think of a name for them next week.
All right, next week.
We'll park that till next week.
There you go. I'll get you onto that.
This has been the sounding board for DrinkWise. If you're choosing to drink, choose to DrinkWise. And if it's Greyhound Adoption Month and you're choosing to find Mitch, choose to PR Payoff Wise.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Board podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Tune in for questions tomorrow, and to send a question to the boys, email thesoundingboard@sen.com.au, follow the show on Twitter @soundingboardep, and like the Facebook page. It's all thanks to DrinkWise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to DrinkWise.